You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 17th of February 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Well, I want to begin today's podcast just talking a little bit about donations. Now, I've been bringing it up at the end of a few podcasts recently when I can remember to bring it up, because we do need donations to keep the website going. We have, I am told by Search Console, that we have about 7,000 regular listeners, individual listeners, and they don't obviously listen to every podcast, but that's about how many listeners that we have. And the cost to run Radio Albion work out at about $200 a month. That's all in. That's $100 for server space, about $50 for internet, and it probably works out at about $50 for hardware that we use. So you can say that there's a minimum of $150 that needs to go out just to pay the bills, basically, every month. And if I don't get that in donations, I have to pay that out of my own pocket. And I don't like to seem as if I'm complaining, but it does get a bit depressing when you think you put all this work in and people tell you how much they enjoy listening to Radio Albion, how much it improves their lives, but people don't want to help out with the costs of it. We did have someone regularly last year who was sending $200 a month, and that was really, really helpful, and they helped to pay for it, basically, but they're unable to do that now. And we only had one donation since Christmas. One donation since Christmas, and since September, we only had two donations, which appeared at Christmas. Now, it's very easy to set up Bitcoin. All you have to do is download an Electrum wallet, install that on your computer, open it up. It's very simple to do. And then you just go to localbitcoin.com, purchase some Bitcoin. You don't need to upload your passport or your driving license or anything like that. There's various different ways that you can buy it on local Bitcoin. You can do a bank transfer. You can purchase some with PayPal. You can purchase it with a credit card. You could even send cash, I think. All different ways of doing it. You can purchase all different amounts on there. So you just purchase a bit of Bitcoin. You can purchase £10 worth, £20 worth. Get that sent to your Bitcoin wallet, your Electrum wallet. And all you need to do in order to do that is just press the receive button. And and when you do that, you'll be given a line of code. And you just give that line of code to the person that you are buying your Bitcoin from. They will then deposit that Bitcoin in your wallet. And then you just press the send button on your Electrum wallet. And where the space comes up for the identifier, you then put in the Radio Albion Bitcoin identifier number in that bit there where it says send, and then you can choose how much you want to send to us. I know it's complicated, it's not as easy or as simple as using something like PayPal, but this is what we are reduced to. We have to use Bitcoin, and it has become easier over the years, and it would be greatly appreciated if people would donate to the project, because people are obviously using it. They obviously like our content. We all put a lot of work into it. And it's not really fair that we should be paying for it as well when we're producing it out of a sense of duty to you, our listeners. The next subject that I really wanted to get into today was brought up by listening to a stream last night, and there was a discussion on there, and the discussion was really centered around two things. It was centered around Winston Churchill and how he is looked at as a great leader of the British people, and National Socialism and the fact that we supposedly won the war. And it was being suggested that as nationalists, we should be overlooking Winston Churchill's failures and the harm that he did to us because he is perceived as being such a great hero to the general public. The problem with this is that that means you're basing your views on a lie. Winston Churchill didn't do a lot of good for the British people. Winston Churchill lost us the British Empire. He caused millions of British and European young men to be killed in that war. And the idea that we actually won the war, I think that should be questioned. I mean, how can you win a war against your own people? How can a family say that they have won a battle when the battle was between two sons of that family? It's not logical. And if you look at what has happened since the war, I think that just proves that we didn't win the war. I think 3 years later, the invasion began, the real invasion, with the Windrush boat docking in Britain. And a people that were completely unlike us began flooding into our country and replacing us and ethnically cleansing us out of our towns and our cities to such an extent that London is now 60% non-white, our capital city. That was the real invasion. And that would never have happened if it wasn't for us losing the war. The minute we picked up arms against our brothers in Germany, we had lost that war. Another thing that's been brought up in this conversation was Dresden and how British nationalists should not have been having a day of mourning for Dresden. But to think because we supposedly won that war, because we should be cheering, because we defeated Germany and we won that war. But Dresden was a war crime. Winston Churchill is a war criminal. Dresden was full of civilians and refugees. And they were turned into flambé. They were roasted alive in a firestorm. That's what the mourning is for. Not because we supposedly won the war or because we feel sorry for Germans, but because it was a war crime. It was against civilians. And this is a pattern of Winston Churchill. If you go back to the First World War, Winston Churchill started putting hidden guns on neutral ships. He started putting hidden guns on passenger ships. So passenger ships with civilians on them became legitimate targets. He instructed these passenger ships to, when they saw a U-boat, to pretend that they were surrendering and then fire on the U-boat, which meant that the U-boats could no longer risk surfacing and saying to these vessels, you need to get your crew onto those lifeboats because we are going to have to sink your ship because we are at war. And instead of being able to do that, because of what Churchill had done, it meant that the U-boats had no choice but to just torpedo these vessels. And that's how much Winston Churchill cared about the British people and about civilian life. He changed the rules of Navy warfare from that day onwards, when he broke the rules of warfare, basically. And he was the one that broke the rules of warfare and killed civilians. The man was a monster. He should never have been leading the country. Maybe he would have been good if he had been in the troops, if he'd actually been fighting, because I think he was quite a bloodthirsty maniac. But to actually be leading the country, everything that he did was dishonourable. He was breaking treaties, breaking the established rules of warfare. And we had spent centuries coming up with what we would call a just war. I mean, you can go back to the days of chivalry, and they would stop fighting on a Sunday, They would have breaks so that they could clear the dead from the field. Everything was done according to gentlemanly rules and gentlemanly conduct, right up until Churchill got involved and just decided to break all these rules, whereas Adolf Hitler kept to the rules. He kept to the Geneva Convention. After the war finished, Churchill and Roosevelt decided that they were not going to go along with the Geneva Convention. They decided that they were going to designate all the German prisoners of war as unarmed combatants. So instead of being entitled to the same rights that the Germans had given all of their prisoners of war, they took away all their rights. So they weren't entitled to food. They weren't entitled to shelter and accommodation. And I forget the exact figure. It's in the millions of them died due to starvation, due to being in these camps that Roosevelt put up. And then you've got the hypocrisy of Churchill supposedly going to war against Germany to protect Poland from being invaded by Germany. Well, why didn't Churchill go to war against Stalin then, who also invaded Poland? And what happened at the end of the war? Why wasn't Poland given back to the Polish? It was handed over to Stalin. And the reason for Hitler going into Germany in the first place is because of the massacres of the German civilians that were going on in Danzig. And this had been discussed for quite some time. The previous Polish minister that was responsible for this, he had a great rapport with Adolf Hitler, and things were going in a good direction and the problem was going to be sorted out, but he ended up passing away, and there was a new minister responsible for this, and Hitler decided that, look, we need to have a summit about this. We need to have a final meeting. I can't have hundreds of thousands of Germans being brutally massacred, with their eyes gouged out and their genitals being cut off. I mean, horrific things were going on, and ethnic cleansing. And he said, look, we need to have a summit about this. And this is the final date when we need to have this summit by. And all the letters were sent out, and they were waiting for the Poles to turn up and come to an agreement that would have been acceptable to both the Polish and the Germans. And the Poles didn't turn up. The Poles didn't turn up. So what was Hitler's choice there? To go in and rescue these Germans from the formerly German town of Danzig, or to just leave it? It was a far worse situation than we faced with Argentina and the Falkland Islands. I mean, if you imagine it, if Argentina had started brutally massacring the British citizens over there in the Falkland Islands, Britain would have gone straight in there. I mean, the Argentinians hadn't even started brutally massacring the British people. And another situation that you can compare it to, you can compare Putin going into Crimea to rescue the Russian people in Crimea because he was concerned that they would be attacked by the Ukrainians. Again, it wasn't a situation that was even a tenth as serious as the situation that was going on in Danzig. And as soon as Hitler had secured the Germans and pacified that half of Poland, he sued for peace. He said, I want peace. We need to stop this war. This is ridiculous. And he actually made over 20 offers of peace to Churchill. And every one of them was after Hitler had had a victory. Never before known that somebody is victorious in battle and then makes offers of peace and offers to go back to how things were. I mean, he offered to go back to original borders at the beginning of the war at one point. I mean, after the retreat at Dunkirk, when Hitler had taken France and he was victorious, he offered peace then. He offered peace terms then. I mean, the very fact that he did that shows you how honourable a man that he was, because he had Britain at his mercy. He had the whole fleet at his mercy. He could have just bombed those beaches, or he could have put all those soldiers in prison. He had basically defeated Britain at that point, and instead of being merciless and being a savage, like Churchill was, he was an honourable white man. He said, look, I have you at my mercy here, but instead of enslaving you or killing you, which is what would have been done in the past when you had your enemy at your mercy, he allowed the British people to go back to Britain, expecting that Churchill would behave like an honourable man and accept that this war was completely pointless. But he didn't, as we know, because he wanted war, because he was a warmonger. And another side to this as well, another part of this, is all the British people that didn't want war, nobody wanted war. Nobody at all wanted war. Churchill ended up having to lock up all the nationalists, Oswald Mosley, and all the nationalists, and a large portion of those nationalists were men that had served with distinction during the First World War. They were locked up, they weren't given habeas corpus, they weren't charged with anything. While this was going on, the hypocrite Winston Churchill was flying over to America with a copy of the Magna Carta, talking about our rights and our freedoms, when all the conscientious objectors to the war had been locked up. And these were patriots. These were patriots who were saying, there is no way we would ever fight against Britain, and we will fight for Britain against Germany, and we will lay down our lives for our country against Germany. But we don't agree that we should be at war. That was the point there, that they didn't agree with this. After the war had finished, the British people did not vote Churchill in to office. They voted against Churchill. So even when he was victorious, the British people voted against him. He had no concern at all for the British soldiers. Think about the Gallipoli incident, where he sent the Navy over to Turkey to try and take the Dardanelles with no planning whatsoever. And it ended up with 250,000 British and other European troops dead and wounded because of Churchill's stupidity. Think of the concentration camps in the Boer War, the starving of the Indians. 4 million, I think it was, that starved to death, thanks to Churchill. I mean, the guy was an absolute devil. He's not somebody that we should be holding up as some kind of hero. We need to be pointing these things out to people. He's not very well liked in Ireland because of what he did in Ireland. He's not very well liked in Wales because what he did in Wales. Hollywood has made him out to be a great hero, but he was never seen as a hero by the British people. He may have won the war, but it was by dishonourable means. And by winning the war, he certainly wasn't winning it for the British people. He was winning it for the banking system. He was winning it for the central banks. That was what it was about. More than anything else, is because Hitler got rid of the international banking system in Germany. And he was doing the same in the European countries that he liberated. That war was for our enemies, basically. Churchill was winning that war for our enemies. And Churchill himself wasn't even ethnically British. His mother was part Red Indian. And this was brought up in the Houses of Parliament at one point, saying that it was his heritage that was showing when he had used some impatient wording. And it's a very politically incorrect term that he was actually called, which I'm not going to use in this podcast. So I think we can't hold Churchill up to be some great leader. Okay, he may have said some good things in his life. He said, keep Britain white. Well, there's nothing to stop us from using that and using quotes of Churchill saying that. That's great. There's also the quote where he pointed out how the Bolsheviks were in the majority Jewish. That's another great quote that can be used. We can use his quotes about Islam, but we shouldn't be holding up the fact that he won the war as being something positive, because he didn't win the war for us. As I say, straight away afterwards, we had the invasion. The invasion began, the Great Replacement. After that, we had the Holocaust lie, the exaggeration, the mythical gas chambers that there is no evidence for. This supposed monstrosity that occurred that is used to try and silence nationalists all over the world and put down nationalist movements and say that, oh, they all lead to the gassing of the Jews. They don't, for which there is no evidence. Now, I'm not saying that any of this should be central to nationalism. I don't believe that we should be pointing out that National Socialism is the way that we should go, or, you know, that we should be highlighting swastikas or anything like that. But we do need to understand the truth of what happened during the Second World War and how we got to the situation that we're in today. And we shouldn't be denying it. We can't build a nationalist movement that's based upon lies. It needs to be based upon the truth. Now, there were a lot of things about National Socialism that were very good. The economics system that they had for a start, the racial hygiene ideas that they had, the eugenics ideas that the brightest people should be encouraged to reproduce, the paying of families to have large families, the understanding that the greatest value that a country has is its youth, that because it's the youth that are going to grow to improve upon things for the next generation. All these ideas should be a part of nationalism. We don't have to say they are National Socialist, but if we are asked about them, then we should say that. We should point that out. It was pointed out in this podcast that people are more supportive of Adolf Hitler than our own people. And, you know, that could be a, you know, that could be a criticism that is raised. I mean, I have thought about this myself with Radio Albion, because we do have a lot of revisionism here. We do look at the war, and we do say it was an unjust war, and that the Allies should not have been fighting against Germany. But as well as that, we do have shows that are dedicated specifically to Britain, like Aryan Britannia. We've got 50 different podcasts on British history, and we want to hold up our British heroes, people like Alfred the Great, the Duke of Wellington, Ernest Shackleton, Captain Cook, Admiral Bligh, all these great characters, Boadicea, all these great characters from our past. We should be holding them up as the examples that we should be looking to in British nationalism. But we can also take inspiration from National Socialism and say, well, look, the National Socialists fought back against the degeneracy. They failed because we live in a corrupt world. They failed. And even if they had won, it wouldn't have been perfect. You know, man cannot build anything that is perfect. This is this idea of the utopia that we get sold by communism. It's a false idea because it's a fallen world that we live in. And these people that rise up to fight against corruption and immorality and degeneracy, you know, they are close to God, but they are not God. And there will always be things that they do that aren't perfect. I mean, you can look at National Socialism. You can say, well, you know, they did have some silly ideas, such as removing the Old Testament from the Bible. That was one idea that they had. And that's Marcionism. You remove the Old Testament from the Bible, you remove the justification for Jesus being the Messiah. And this was a ridiculous idea. You know, they not everything that they did was of benefit to them. I don't think encouraging the idea that the Jews were the people of the Old Testament, I don't think that was a good idea either. I mean, that was a very bad idea when you think about it. And some people today will still insist that, even though they know the evidence to the contrary, because they think that it's more pragmatic to go along with a lie, because they think that's going to be more popular with people. But anything that's based on a lie is likely to fall down and collapse because it is built on a lie. If you're building something on a lie, you have to continually keep lying and adding more lies to it to hold up this edifice. And it can all just come crashing down, just with a few simple truths. I mean, just look at the Holocaust lies for a start. I mean, they've built this huge, great edifice. They've got all these Holocaust museums. They've got all these mandatory Holocaust teaching in schools. But all you've got to do is point out that you can't kill people by throwing cyanide pellets through holes in the roof, or say you can't kill people by gassing them in a room with a wooden door, or there is no autopsy report in the whole of World War II of anybody being gassed. All these rooms that were supposedly the gas chambers, they've been tested, they've got no cyanide on the walls or just background traces of it. You can just point out that the cyanide was actually used to get rid of typhus. All these pictures of people having their shaved heads and how horrific it was, their heads were shaved and their clothes were taken from them, that was to save them from typhus. That was to prevent them from getting disease. What about the hospital that was there at the camp? What about the swimming pool? What about the brothel? What about the cinema? What about the theatre? What about the creche? Why would the Germans be moving people all over Europe in the middle of the war so that they could just get them in this one area together and then gas them? Why wouldn't they just do like the communists and dig a pit and shoot them where they were, like the communists did in Poland? We need to be destroying the lies, and we need to have a movement that is founded on the truth. I mean, where did the alt-right and white nationalism 2.0, where did it come from? Well, it came from the truth movement. And the truth movement has that word there in the middle of it. I mean, nationalism is still a part of the truth movement. And that's where it grew from a desire to discover the truth and a desire to right injustices and to gather behind a man like Churchill that did so much harm to Britain, as well as Europe, as well as our European brothers, just because he is popular in the public mind's eye is ridiculous. What happens if because we've been getting behind Churchill because he's popular and people join us, and then they discover all the things that Churchill did, then they're going to be disillusioned with us and they're going to think, well, you liars, you were covering up for this man. This man was a monster and you were covering up for him. And the movement falls apart. And I can understand the temptation of wanting to be popular and making out that Churchill was a good man because of that and that we support him. But how could you live with your conscience saying things that you know are not true? And if you don't know for yourself that these things aren't true, then I recommend you listen to the last 5 episodes that we've done of Truthful Out Radio, where we've been specifically looking at the worst instances of Churchill's treason to his own people and treason to mankind, basically. Causing that the famine out in India that starved all these innocent Indians over there. I mean, he wasn't just doing it to the British and the Germans. The guy was an absolute devil. We need to be getting behind people like Alfred the Great and pointing out what a great hero he was, and pointing out the great things that he did, and what an honourable man he was, what a good example of a nationalist he was. And we can also look at what Hitler did and say, well, he did great things for the Germans. I do agree we need to be looking back to our own myths and our own folklore and our own national myths and encouraging them. But those things happened a long time ago. The nearest part of history that happened to us where there was a racial awakening was the Second World War. And it was the fascist movements, the National Socialists, the Iron Guard, and Mussolini's fascists. They were the ones that actually put these nationalist ideas into practice. So that's why we look back at them. But our loyalty should be to our own countries. Our loyalty should be to Britain and the British people, if we are British. I can understand if you're American, then maybe you can look to National Socialism and you can look on that more as being part of your people, because a lot of America was colonized by Germany. A lot of it was colonized by England as well. So it's a little bit more broad in America. Looking up to heroes, you've got a bit more of a broad range that you can look to. But basically, I mean, we just need to base all our thinking on the truth, and we need to base it on the ideal. I mean, if we have to compromise a little, okay, we can compromise, but we shouldn't forget the ideal. What is best? The ideal is the ethnostate is 100% pure white. We're not likely to get that now because of how far things have progressed, and we have to adapt to the way that we live now. So if we can just reduce immigration, if we could just send back foreign criminals, if we could just get Britain to being 95% white, that would be a wonderful thing. That would be a great thing. It doesn't mean that we've forgotten that the ideal is 100%. The ideal is that homosexuality is a capital crime, because that would drive it underground. And if you went by biblical law, you would have to have three witnesses to a homosexual act for somebody to be convicted and executed. So it wouldn't be that there would be that many people executed, and that would drive it underground. But the world has progressed since then. We now have homosexual age of consent at 16. We now have it being taught in schools. We now have drag queen story hour. So if we could just prevent it being taught to under 16-year-olds, we could get it so that there are some schools that specifically don't teach this sort of stuff to children. That would be a positive move. That would be a good thing. That would be a good thing to have. But it doesn't mean that we have forgotten that the ideal is to have it banned entirely. The ideal is to have a 100% white movement. But we live in multicultural countries now. We have 15% non-white in Britain, and we have non-whites that want to support our movement. It's illegal for us to have an organisation that only allows whites. This happened to the BNP. They were told that they couldn't have just whites. So they took it to court, and they lost. And we have to keep within the law. So if we have political parties, if we have movements, we have to be prepared to accept people that may not be white, but they are pro-white. We have to insist that they are pro-white. Of course, we can have stringent requirements of them. But that doesn't mean that we have forgotten that the ideal is 100% pro-white. It just means that we understand that the world we live in is fallen, that the world we live in is more degraded and more corrupted by the day, and we have to adapt to that in order to survive and prosper. Anyway, I think I've gone a little bit over time here, so thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to donate to our Bitcoin wallet if you can afford to. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.